Temper, California, and at 11:30 on the film show, they will celebrate the glory days of weird amateur television. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. Become a member by going to kboo.fm or use the mobile app and click on donate.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Orchards of 82nd grand opening on Thursday, April 25th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Orchards of 82nd in Portland. Rose Community Development will be celebrating the grand opening of the Orchards of 82nd, a fully affordable housing community in partnership with the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon, Oregon Metro, Portland General Electric, Portland Housing Bureau, Home Forward, Prosper Portland, Oregon Housing and Community Services, and Sarah Architects. The event will welcome 48 new families into new affordable housing. Again, that's the Orchards of 82nd grand opening on Thursday, April 25th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Orchards of 82nd, 8118 Southeast Division Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is looked up to very much by people all over the country.
Please join us on Saturday, April 27th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. for the KBOO Edit-A-Thon. The Edit-A-Thon helps us add missing information to the KBOO Archives Memory Bank. We need KBOO former volunteers, current volunteers, and listeners to identify content and programs of our historical archive. We'll be dealing with old audio, program guides, and more.
Was attracted by the story.
This event is open to the public. Again, that's the second KBOO Edit-A-Thon on Saturday, April 27th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. here at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland.
And there was a great deal of commotion regarding this event.
More information can be found at kboo.fm/editathon2019.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Please join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Today I want to talk about confronting the increasing risk of civil war in the United States. It's going to be my little theme. If we have time, I'm hoping you can call in. First, I want to go to headlines, and also I want to say that being joined by a soon-to-be blogger, Asher.
All right, thank you.
Good morning.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, and so Asher is checking it out and may have some comments. We shall see. From Radio Havana, Cuba, the spokesperson for the Iranian Foreign Ministry, Abbas Mousavi, issued a statement warning of adverse consequences if the U.S. ended their sanctions waiver on the Persian Gulf nation's oil imports. And, of course, speaking for myself, that is just what Trump has threatened to do. The quote from Mousavi is, "Given the illegal nature of the U.S. sanctions, Iran has not and will not consider any value for the waivers granted. However, in view of the negative effects in politics of these sanctions, Iranian Foreign Ministry has been continuously in touch with relevant domestic institutions while holding comprehensive consultations with many foreign partners, including Europeans," end quote. The Trump administration announced earlier this week that they would be canceling waivers to eight countries buying oil from Iran as they tighten the economic blockade against the Persian Gulf nation. Mousavi said Iran will take appropriate actions to counter the U.S. move, adding that his government will make it public. Not everyone in the Iranian government and military were as cordial as Mousavi, the commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps' Navy. Alireza Tangsiri vowed to take harsher actions against the U.S. Tangsiri vowed to close the important Strait of Hormuz, which would be a major blow to the U.S. Navy, which is currently docked at their largest Middle Eastern naval base in Tehran. Quoting Tangsiri, "If we are prevented from using it, we will close it. In the event of any threats, we will not have the slightest hesitation to protect and defend Iran's waterway," end quote. Now, I want to talk about that for a second. The Strait of Hormuz is just deep enough you can run tankers through it. Doesn't need to be dredged, but it's kind of like that. Strait of Hormuz is really tight. And it is possible to close it simply by sinking any ship there. The threat of closing it is a threat of war, basically. So this means that Trump's economic threats against Iran are resulting in a threat of war or war provocation from this aspect of the Iranian government. Don't have time to go into how they set that up in terms of their government, but a major institution in Iran and one in control of substantial naval assets is now saying that if they're not able to use the Strait of Hormuz to sell oil and get cash to Iran under the sanctions, they're just going to close the Strait of Hormuz, and that's going to be war if that happens, because no one will be able to get oil through that region, through that part of the region, through the Strait of Hormuz with tankers. It's so that would it would have an effect on you. Certainly, you'll be paying a hell of a lot more for gas if that strait is closed. That's something that really should be top of the news roll right now. Trump threatened sanctions to the point that Iran would be choked off. Not to the point of starving, but very, very substantially impaired and affected. And they are saying we'll close the Strait of Hormuz. This means war, frankly. Now, turning to another Radio Havana Cuba article, Venezuela's Minister of Communication, Jorge Rodriguez, has revealed the identification of five people involved in attacks on the national electric system in Venezuela. Rodriguez named Ramon Osvaldo Garcia, who resides in Spain, and several other people as those involved in what the Venezuelan government has said was sabotage against the country's electricity system. Rodriguez was quoted saying there are requests to Interpol regarding these people related to the attack on the electrical system who live in the United States, Colombia, and Spain. Between March 7th and 23rd, more than 45 minor attacks against the electrical system have taken place. He added that in the investigations of the attacks on the electrical system from March 25th to 28th, Jesus Rodriguez Landoni was identified as one of those involved. He has fled to the United States and is living in the residence of an officer of the U.S. Armed Forces. Excuse me, lived, past tense. Quoting again, Venezuelan authorities are looking for Jesus Landoni for attacking the electricity system. He left the country on April 8th, is a quote of Rodriguez. As for the future of the electrical grid, Radio Havana writes, Rodriguez assured that, quote, we have been building a system completely impossible to be attacked by terrorists, end quote, which is just blather on his part. But there you have it. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. This week in whiteness, Facebook has a problem in black and white, black activists charged, where even pointing out racism or racist posts or mentioning the word black as in black-owned business can get the post taken down for violating hate speech standards and lead to a suspension of the user's account. This is from The Root in an article by Dara Sharif. Dara writes, activists call it being zucked. USA Today reports a reference to Facebook co-founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg, and that activists say they're fed up. And perhaps you've heard of such a thing. I've certainly seen complaints as I check Facebook. Returning to the text, teacher Carolyn Weisinger is one of them. She says Facebook suspended her account and deleted a post in which she pointed out the racism she saw in actor Liam Neeson's admission that he dreamed of hunting down and killing a black man, any black man, after a white female friend of his said that she was raped by a man who happened to be black. Her comment, quote, white men are so fragile and the mere presence of a black person challenges every single thing in them, end quote, got her suspended or put into what many activists refer to as Facebook jail. It is exhausting, Wissinger told Facebook, and it drains you emotionally. So there's more on that article, and you can find that in The Root, theroot.com, much more on that. Now, I said that I was going to talk about confronting the increasing risk of civil war in the United States. And so basically what I want to do is repeat something that I said last week about that as I was doing a three-hour show, and I said these comments, or something pretty close to these comments, closer to noon, around 11 a.m. So this may be new to you at the 9 o'clock hour if you're someone who tunes into the radio episodically and at a usual time as people do. Stephen Miller, the top advisor to President Trump, who Trump is advising not to testify to Congress, even though he's been called to Congress, is making it clear that in order to consolidate the minority rule that his administration represents, his intention is to move the United States closer to civil war. His latest tactic is to continue the aggressive left baiting by putting up yet another obstacle, in this case that of bonds denial, in the face of defenseless refugees fleeing U.S.-imposed violence and poverty in Central America. This tactic follows on many other successful efforts to divide the nation, including the banning of Muslim immigrants, the attack on transgender citizens, the intentionally cruel separation of children from refugee families, the dog whistle support of murdering racist mobs, etc. For people of color, of course, this new bloody civil war started long ago, but it's about to get much worse, and the reactionaries are drooling over the prospect. And it is because of the infiltration of reactionaries into our nation's institutions, particularly police, and even into our legislators, that this threat driven by Stephen Miller is getting worse and worse. So I'm making this alarming prediction for three reasons. First, it is evident that we are where we are heading as a nation. With white reactionaries and their racist, sexist, or even random assault weapon slaughter tactics increasing exponentially. Second, because our last and rapidly diminishing chance for preventing civil war exists only if we acknowledge the phenomenon and demand action to stop it. And third, because since I frankly cannot assign a high probability rationality prevailing over the momentum of economic, historic, and social forces moving us towards a second American civil war, I am throwing broad hints to the revolutionary left that we can win it, and we cannot afford to lose it. If you have comments and questions about this, you can call 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I talk about this in terms of Trump driving the division of the nation. And one aspect of that is Trump's recent declared tactic, according to the New York Times, of fighting every subpoena he faces. Quoting the New York Times, and it's funny to me to be quoting the New York Times on a show whose conceit is news you're not supposed to know. That says something about how fraught things have gotten when the New York Times is on the side of not quite dissent, I guess. Well, dissent against Trump, in any event. That's how crazy things are, that I would quote the New York Times in this frame. But they write, as a matter of law, Mr. Trump's declared tactic of fighting every subpoena faces steep obstacles, according to legal experts. The House can vote to hold in contempt officials who refuse to show up in response to subpoenas and ask judges for orders requiring compliance with them. Litigation over whether those subpoenas were legitimate will turn on precedents that require both branches to make good faith efforts to accommodate each other's needs. It will also delve into whether executive privilege is waived in instances in which the Trump administration has already disclosed some of the information that the president is trying to keep from Congress. But ultimately, prevailing in court may not be the goal. By essentially forcing Democrats to keep filing lawsuits to try to enforce their subpoenas, Mr. Trump will be fighting what he can portray as presidential harassment, and to stall the inquiries themselves. And that's where New York Times is going with this, trying to expose this tactic of the Trump administration to simply not be accountable by law, not be accountable to Congress, to change and thwart the balance of powers in the U.S. Constitution, the balance between the executive, judicial, and legislative branches. On Wednesday, returning to the text here in the New York Times, the Justice Department said a Civil Rights Division official, John Gore, would defy a subpoena to testify on Thursday about its addition of a citizenship question to the census. This week, White House lawyers indicated that they would tell former White House counsel Don McGahn and other former officials not to comply with subpoenas for their testimony, according to a person familiar with the Trump's legal strategy. So, speaking for myself again, this is a broad tactic, and it is it comes in the context of many gestures from President Trump indicating that he intends to rule by intimidation and to put roadblocks in the very core of American government, the only, you know, different and substantially good thing that one can say about the U.S. government is that it has this balance of powers so that there's some capacity for checking and balancing. Trump wants to end that, and this is not, of course, the first time that Trump has attempted that, particularly on issues regarding the border. He has attempted simply to have his way, regardless of what the proper balance of powers should be or what the law is. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. So I'm saying that due to the infiltration of the police, particularly, certainly the military, and definitely, according to recent news articles, members of legislatures in the United States, the threat of actual civil war, and I'm talking about a Syria-type civil war, degeneration into violence, it has become more real now than it has been in my lifetime. I believe perhaps there was a moment in 1968 when there was a threat of that over the Vietnam War and the descent of people who were being, young men, frankly, who were being dragged into it. But if you want to imagine what it would be like to lose this war, imagine yourself chained next to Victor Jara in the stadium in Chile where the disappeared were taken after Pinochet took his hints from Henry Kissinger. Watch as Victor's hands were broken by gun stocks in order to punish him for singing about hope and revolution. They said, "Why don't you play us a tune now?" Did you know that they were so afraid of power, the power of his words and music, that they displayed his tortured dead body in the entrance to the famous stadium in Santiago to drain the hope of all who entered in chains? Remember the t-shirts the fascists were wearing last August 4th when they demonstrated how they could shut down our town with the loving protection of our own police force? Those t-shirts celebrated that slaughter. They want to bring that terror here. Do you know that Victor Jara was first beaten by right-wing thugs long before the Pinochet coup when they came into his town to intimidate the left, just as on August 4th? Does that tactic seem familiar now? I want to talk more about that, but I have a call, and Amy did call in, and so we'll try that again. If you'd like to call, 503-231-8187. Something else to remember about the Chilean 9/11/73 horror: those tortures did not appear out of nowhere. They were ordinary Chilean police and military, constrained by law and comity in society until their big chance came. And Chileans said, "It can't happen here." They had a very calm civil society and a long tradition of it. So the shocking thing is your torturer, potentially, is nearby, probably in a police car, and will swear right now today to anyone or to God that he will never do such a thing, but he will when he is given permission. And most of the cops I've noticed are in an absolute rage when it comes to how they are not allowed to do what they feel like doing to dissenters. And if you're listening to me right now and you're a regular listener to KBOO, you're a dissenter in their book. Giving permission to fascism is Trump's trademark, and it's getting worse and worse. Here's part of John Nichols' piece in The Nation on Trump's intentional divisiveness. And again, if you want to call in, 503-231-8187, it's 9:17. You're listening to Press Watch. And coming up in just less than 15 minutes, Parafoggering with Fight the Empire, thank you, engineer. and he will be talking about the Mueller report, so you'll want to stay tuned for that. Donald Trump, John Nichols writes, is not an electoral mastermind. He is something far more dangerous, a persistent political grifter who is desperately, shamelessly determined to maintain his grip on the presidency that he assumed after losing the 2016 popular vote by almost 3 million ballots. Trump's desperation will intensify as the 2020 election approaches. He will turn with increasing frequency to the playbook of racism and xenophobia that he has employed from the moment 4 years ago when he crept from reality TV into the Republican debate stage. Trump confirmed his intentions in mid-April when he began launching incendiary attacks on Congressman Ilhan Omar after she observed regarding the terrorist attacks on September 11, 2001, that, quote, some people did something and then all of us were starting to lose our access to civil liberties. And speaking for myself, that recording is taken grossly out of context and was tweaked in order to frighten and infuriate people. But to return to Nichols' writing, no one who's paid attention to how Trump plays politics imagines that he sincerely thinks that Omar was slighting the horrors of 9/11. The president is deliberately inciting hatred against one of the first two Muslim women elected to the House as a gambit designed to divide Americans in general and Democrats in particular. Trump's goal is to create enough chaos to maintain his viability as a candidate for re-election. He couldn't care less about the long-term damage that comes from cleaving a country against itself or against the threats to Omar's life that extends from his combustible campaigning. And Mike has called in. The number to call, 503-231-8187. Hi, Mike.
Hey, I just want to rage a while. Isn't anybody paying attention? Aren't these people on the right? Don't they realize them too? And what about Germany 33, 34? Slowly but surely they crept this stuff in, right? It's happening again. And nobody, why isn't everybody up in arms? Why isn't the whole country, right, left, everybody? What is the matter with them?
I think that's a really good question. I think that, you know, my ready answer is this is something that you really don't want to look at. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, it comes from the news. They sit and watch the news. They're allergic to news. And I think it's filtered down through society. Nobody wants to talk about any unpleasant subject. I think they're programmed for it.
Well, I can certainly blame the news for the news agenda and for the way things are announced, and that's been the conceit of my show for the last 3 decades, I guess. So I'm down with you there.
I mean, good girl. We love you, dear. I love you, Teresa.
Thank you very
wonderful.
Much. No, I understand confusion. I use a very male voice on the air, and I just decided to do that for a number of reasons. But actually, as the caller brings up, I am transgender. My name is Teresa Mitchell. And this male voice is something that I got very used to over 43 years of living as a male. But I ain't. I'm actually in the studio with Asher, and I wonder if you have comments on what I was saying. I'm wondering how that makes you feel to hear that there is, you know, such movement towards civil war.
You know, I think it's really interesting. And like the caller said, Mike, people don't want to talk about it. And I think part of that is fear. I think part of that is that we're so overloaded by negative news right now that if you can find time and conversation to not talk about it, then it feels like a relief. But we need to be talking about these things right now. And I mean, I'm scared. There's a lot of scary stuff out here right now.
It must affect you pretty strongly. I mean, you're just getting ready to graduate from high school. And I'm talking about civil war, and I certainly hope that it can be thwarted, that this does not occur.
Well, I feel like currently we have so much potential to go in the right direction with college tuition, with politics, but we don't know if we're going to get there, and it's a very fine line between what can happen.
I think there's a lot of people who are who are willing to work for a better society. I noticed that Joe Biden announced for presidency yesterday or today, and nonetheless, it would appear from the CNN rankings that I just read this morning that Bernie Sanders is the top candidate at this point. Well, returning to this discussion of how severe the situation is getting, basically, already we can quantify the breakdown of our society in terms of trust and compassion for each other. The houselessness crisis particularly shows this degeneration as we not only accept the reality of an increasing portion of our own population living in tents and under bridges, but find a way to criminalize them for it. Already we force the very ill to die for lack of medicinal aid while reserving ever-increasing funds for the insurance industry instead. They literally make billions, and their CEOs make hundreds of millions. Already we bankrupt the working class to pay for an attempt to militarily occupy and intimidate the entire planet for the depredation of the very rich. Already, we arbitrarily criminalize entire races and encourage our police to slaughter them without consequence. Already, the rural areas grown under impossible to sustain levels of unemployment and drug suicides and despair and rage. Already, we see cops stomp even elderly women in their rage against dissent. Most of us aren't used to the sound of gunfire yet, but under these circumstances, I think that we soon will be, and I'm sorry to be the bearer of such a horrible revelation. Right now, Robbie's on the air. Robbie is on the
correct.
Hello, Robbie.
Hi, Teresa. Did I see you last night at the deep end?
At the deep end? No, that wasn't me.
Okay. Sorry. I just wanted to bring up. I think one of the things that a lot of people are having a hard time doing right now is kind of looking in the mirror. For instance, with all the bad news, like I have friends that are very. They would call themselves very into politics, if you will. But this fact of the matter is they're not. And this is another thing that I kind of see going on is we're afraid to kind of point out the elephant in the room. We're told all about this election interference and all this stuff that's going on. But what I see was the media establishment is the number one influencer over our elections. And I see the Democratic National Convention, the Democratic National Party, also an influencer of that. But we don't ever talk about the influence that it did on the primaries. We know that for a fact there was large amounts of voter suppression, which all helped one particular candidate in the Democratic primary. But I think what my point is that I have a lot of friends who are just kind of afraid to kind of look at what their own, like, it's like there's identity politics, which kind of stops us from going into that step further. Why did this happen? Why did that go on? And that's kind of the ugly truth that people are failing to admit. Anyway, I'll take my comments off the air, and I really appreciate hearing what you guys had to say.
Yeah, I guess that falls more in the category of it's really hard to look at that ugly truth. Trump has a powerful unstated coalition of the very rich, the very racist, the police, and the military. Might be that he doesn't have quite the unqualified support in the military that he imagines, but the alt-right marches around with its torches and its rifles and imagines that this war that they so desire will be a quick thing, decided by their stockpiles of bullets and exotic weaponry. And once the shooting starts, if it hasn't started already, it will seem as if that is the case at first. The first orgy of killing will be one-sided and terrifying, but we live in the 21st century, not the 20th. And the most important aspect of winning the upcoming civil war would be cyber espionage, AI-driven information crunching, and tactics. I'm saying that because I don't want the left to just assume that all is lost if this horror comes about. And I want to double down on just how bad things are getting. A Washington State Republican, according to a Guardian article written by Jason Wilson, took part in private discussions with right-wing figures about carrying out surveillance psyops and even violent attacks on perceived political enemies, according to chat records obtained by The Guardian this past week. This is State Representative Matt Shee, who represents Spokane Valley in Washington State House. He's still there, participated in the chats with three other men. All the men used screen aliases. The group included Jack Robertson, who broadcasts a far-right radio show, Radio Free Redoubt. It also included Anthony Bosworth, whose history includes a public altercation with his own daughter and bringing guns to a courthouse. And the things that he said on those chats were pretty shocking. The men proposed to confront leftists, whom they repeatedly referred to as communists and Antifa, with a suite of tactics, including violence. For example, some of those tweets said, "When we locate Antifa members, we can confront their parents, their workplaces, their landlords. We can hit them in their safe spaces. If we catch a few of them alone, we can work them. If we can catch a few of them alone and work them over a little bit." Other acts of extreme violence were also suggested. When a specific female Spokane resident was nominated for surveillance in the chat group, this legislator, Robertson, suggested, not the legislator, but the person that the legislator was chatting with, suggested fistful of hair and face slam into a jersey barrier. Treat them like communist revolutionaries. Then shave her bald with a K-bar USMC field knife. You can read more on that in The Guardian. We're getting pretty low on time, but... and so I'm not going to have time to point out the ways in which the left can defend itself if there is an outbreak of war. But I want to say that the left is more than capable of defending itself. And I want to say that we need more KBOOs. One of the more encouraging things, maybe the only encouraging thing that I've seen recently in terms of preventing a violent civil convulsion in the United States, was Bernie Sanders' triumph over the video trap that Fox News had set for him. Trump and Fox News are in an absolute panic about it. I can imagine what it would be like if it had gone completely south, so to speak. That is to say, if Sanders had promoted an assault rifle ban, triggering the right to clutch their beloved war weapons and swear that they're harmless. Reactionaries are drunk on the intimidating power of those guns and will say or do anything to keep them, but Sanders never brought that up. He charmed the Fox audience, confused them, and divided them, and they applauded him 72 times over hopeful ideas, like the provision of true socialized health care and the rational distribution of wealth to the working class. He didn't put it in those terms, but that was what they responded to. Those assault weapons need to go away, but in this polarized climate, I hate to say it, any attempt to take them will spark conflagration. It is hope and ideas and education and motion towards a more just society for everyone that will take the blind rage away from would-be shooters. I have put much of this, much of these comments on my Facebook account. You can find it at Teresa Mitchell in Facebook. And, you know, if you poke through the Teresa Mitchells, I imagine that you will find the right one. So that's there. And I've also been tweeting under KBOO Press Watch. You can find that there. Coming up, as I was saying, Per Fagering coming in just moments to do Fight the Empire. And he'll be talking about the Mueller report. You've been listening to KBOO on 90.7 FM. from our great big red and white Eiffel Tower on the West Hill and other frequencies in Cascadia, and via KBOO.FM, we go out to you and all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 37th Annual Oregon Ceramic Showcase, Friday, April 26th through Sunday, April 28th at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. Oregon Potters Association's 37th Annual Ceramic Showcase and Sale features work by over 150 Oregon Potters Association members. It is one of the largest all-ceramic artist shows in the country, and the showcase features sculptures, wall art, jewelry, tiles, functional pottery, and more. Again, that's the Oregon Ceramic Showcase, Friday, April 26th through Sunday, April 28th at the Oregon Convention Center, 777 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next on Fight the Empire, Pair digs into the Mueller Report. At 10, the Heather McCoy Show will welcome children's author Tracy Hecht about her new series of books entitled Grow and Read. Heather will also have Inland Empire knower Robert Larson on to discuss the city of Temecula's resolution to fight socialism and communism. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Ken Jones talks with Paul Scanese, author of the new novel Temper, California. And 11:30 on the film show, they celebrate the glory days of weird amateur television. All of this KBOO programming is made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.